Johnson v. The Finish Line, Mr. Dorrest. Yeah, Mr. Dorrest.
May it please the Court. In this case of sex discrimination, the evidence shows that my client, Tanya Bauman, did not agree to the Finish Line arbitration plan because the Finish Line never gave her a copy of the arbitration plan, never gave her an opportunity to read it or to agree to it.
The problem is that she signed this very broad agreement in which she acknowledged that the agreement had been made available to her. Said that. Now, maybe it didn't exist, but why'd she sign it then, right? If you say, I've read and understand the above paragraph and have voluntarily agreed to it, doesn't that nail you?
No, Your Honor. They gave her a stack of papers to sign, including this paper, and so she did not know what papers were what, but she did sign.
I don't understand you. It says complete details are contained in a Finish Line Employee Dispute Resolution Plan, which has been made available for my review prior to the execution of this application. So she, I have read and understand the above paragraph and have voluntarily agreed to it. Well, she signed that. Why isn't that a commitment? Sign a contract. Maybe there are things in it you don't actually agree with or believe, but you sign it. You can't go back and say, well, actually, you know, I said these were available to me, but they weren't.
Your Honor, it is undisputed.
I mean, every arbitration agreement would fall apart.
No, Your Honor. The enforceable arbitration plans include the copy being given to...
It doesn't say that. All she's... Look, you can make something available. You don't have to give people copies, right? Why do you have to give people copies? You say to them, if you're interested in the fine print, they're available to you. You can ask for them. You don't have to push it on them.
Your Honor, first of all, the good plans do give them a copy, like in the Tinder case.
Good or secondly, bad, there's nothing illegal about saying, look, if you want to look at this document, here it's available. But we don't want to make a zillion copies because most of the employees aren't interested in the fine print.
Your Honor, that is what occurs when there is an enforceable arbitration agreement. As a matter of fact, the Federal Arbitration Act does require that it be in writing, which means that it is with the possession of both parties. And the parties agree that in this case, no plan was given to Ms. Bauman.
We're talking at cross purposes. There's no requirement of giving the plan to anybody. If you just say it's available, right? It's available. If you want, it's available. It's sitting here.
Okay, Your Honor, that is a different situation because sitting here is something that the person can then read. In this case, it was not made available because there was no indication as to where it was, who made it available. As a matter of fact, in this case...
This is ridiculous. She asks. If she's interested, she says, all right, I want to read it. And if they say, oh, actually, it doesn't exist, well, then fine, all right? But she apparently was content at the notion that it was available. She wasn't interested in reading it, so she signs.
She signed because many papers have been made available to her. The papers that were attached in this case, which provided for her to pay $10,000 or $30,000, were not made available. And they jump up later and say, oh, surprise, you have to pay $10,000 or $30,000.
She said they had been made available to her.
That was a false representation by the company to her.
It was a false representation.
No, she...
Look, if she had asked for them and they hadn't given it to her, that's one thing. But she didn't ask.
Well,
she wasn't interested.
She was given a bunch of papers. She did read those. But there wasn't anything in there about her paying $10,000 or $30,000 before she could bring
a
discrimination case.
That was an available document, which she didn't ask for.
Secondly, it was not made available. There, as you said, here it is. You can read it, and they did not.
She signed it. She said it was. She said it was made available to her.
Many papers were made available to her.
Not interested in it.
But this plan was not made available to her.
I can ask a question. and I look at the plan, which is pretty comprehensive. Did she even know what arbitration meant? Because that word was plain and simple right before her. I look at this, and this is probably a pretty, well, I don't want to call it low level, but some unsophisticated person.
Yes, you're correct.
And so she signs this thing. Now, I can understand where you wish she had a lawyer by her side.
Correct.
But she didn't. And I think anybody that looks at this four-page document, the finish line employee dispute resolution plan, she can read through that and say, I don't know what we're talking about. Now, maybe she would have called her lawyer then, or maybe she wouldn't have taken the job.
Right. That's what the enforceable plans require.
Well, unfortunately,
that she be able to at least read the plan.
She signed it and said she understood it and then took the job. Now, she didn't last very long.
No, this plan was not even made available to her. She signed that the papers had been made available to her, and then later they said, oh, here are seven pages that require you to pay $10,000 or $30,000, depending on how it's calculated, before you can claim that you're discriminated against, which she's, of course, unable to do when she's terminated.
We are at the merits, and that's the problem. Now, I guess we'll get into your issue about whether it costs too much, which the process she's gone through ain't cheap.
Exactly.
Would you be content if we changed our circuit rule and agreed with the Cole case in the D.C. Circuit? Familiar with that case?
Pardon me?
Familiar with that case?
No, Your Honor.
It's your best case.
All right. Well, there are several cases, and no case holds that just making something available is sufficient, but in this case, it was not made available. It was not, as Judge Posner said, here's the plan. You can rate it if you want.
Okay. Look, she didn't ask for it, right?
Your only good argument is about the cost, the $30,000. It's obviously excessive. Now, what the Cole case said was, we're going to cut out that cost business. We're not going to make the plaintiff pay the cost of arbitration, but we are going to require that she arbitrate. So why wouldn't that be a perfectly good solution here? She has to arbitrate, but she won't have to pay the $30,000, or won't have to pay anything. Or what Cole said was she won't have to pay in the arbitration any more than she'd have to pay a lawyer. Hmm. That would take care of the overreaching of because you're charging prohibitive amounts to these people. So why isn't that a good solution?
Your Honor, I think the defendant's argument in that respect, the finish line's argument, depends upon the severability clause.
Would you just answer my question?
Yes.
Why, if we just say, no, she doesn't have to pay the money, she doesn't have to pay more than she'd have to pay a lawyer in an adjudication, then she has to arbitrate. What's wrong with that?
Your Honor, in the facts of the case are different. I think in a general...
Why don't you just answer my question?
Sure. I think that is the... I agree with you. That is the proper way to write an arbitration agreement instead of this threat here.
The Cole case rewrote the arbitration agreement.
Well,
it said no money. I said. You don't have to pay more in arbitration than you would to your lawyer in a...
The Indiana cases are clear that you cannot rewrite the contracts. And in this case, the problem is that this...
And you're stuck.
This kind of threat is that it's a threat against the employees, so the employees do not try to use arbitration. They're threatened with the $10,000 or the $30,000. And then after years of trying to get into court, if the court says, oh, well, okay, after...
When would it be $30,000?
Spend all this time. It's greater than $10,000
or 10%. $300,000 before you get to $30,000.
Yes.
So if she won $300,000, then it's $30,000, I guess.
Right. Well, it's the amount of the claim.
You got to get over $100,000 before it gets over $10,000.
Right.
And,
correct.
And then there's also the whatever the clause says about if she can't afford it, she can make that case to
right.
the arbitrator.
The statutory maximum for compensatory damages, not taking into consideration the back pay, is $300,000. So they can't charge us more than $30,000. Well, not much more than $30,000.
Well, that's a bargain.
So that's why we use $30,000. Well, it would be perhaps for someone like you and me, but for someone who's lost their job, has two children.
This is Manion's point. Just won $300,000. All right, she gets $270,000.
Pardon me?
She just won $300,000, and she's going to get to keep $270,000. Not bad.
Well, if winning were guaranteed, that would be true.
Well, if she loses, she doesn't have to pay anything.
No, she has to pay the $10,000 or $30,000.
She has to pay the $10,000.
Yes.
And unless the judge gives her
exactly.
a discount or something like that.
You're correct.
And in this case... The problem here is you've already gone through all of this expense, and you know what your time is and everything else, regardless of what your agreement is with her. So suddenly, if it goes back to the arbitrator, you've already spent all of this.
Right.
And it'll show that this is more than the arbitrator.
Well, but she has not had to pay out of her pocket the $10,000 or $30,000.
I understand.
So
whatever
your
arrangement,
the arbitration agreement is used
to good counsel, but unfortunately she didn't have it then.
Right, and so the employer counts on that there won't be someone strong enough to spend the time to challenge these arbitration agreements that threaten the employees with this money, so they won't claim discrimination. And in this case, the arbitration agreement that the human resources vice president swore was the one made available to her did not even have an effective date, did not have her signature, did not have anything.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Darst. Mr. Yerkes? I'll give you more time, don't worry. Mr. Yerkes?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Both of Judge McKinney's orders need to be affirmed for the reasons that you were just inquiring of counsel for appellant. And that's because of what the plaintiff did not do before the district court.
Well, if she lost the arbitration, what would be her maximum expense exposure?
Because it was a Title VII claim, I think Your Honors are correct that $300,000 would seem to cap it, and so $30,000 would be her
If she loses, if she gets nothing, what is her maximum expense?
$10,000 is the minimum contribution in the plan.
Well, that's pretty prohibitive, I think, for her.
Well, with respect to this issue, Your Honor,
because in a regular litigation, you could hire a contingent fee lawyer. It's probably Mr. Darst, so he wouldn't pay. Well, she wouldn't have any downside.
Your Honor, with respect to that point, and this goes to the issue of what was not in her affidavit, one of the many features of evidence that she did not include for the district court to evaluate, was a statement along the lines contemplated by the James case, which we cited in our brief. And in that case, this court gave a very specific roadmap to plaintiff's lawyers or to those challenging an arbitration agreement. And that roadmap was, bring us some comparative information about the cost of arbitration versus the cost of litigation. To the extent that that is averred by you and or an expert, and James, there was an arbitrator who submitted an affidavit suggesting that the cost would be somewhere between $38,000 and
$80,000. For arbitration?
For arbitration. And the plaintiff simply did a Me Too affidavit saying I couldn't afford that. Even with that expert affidavit, the James court found that that wasn't sufficient because there was nothing in the affidavit that identified a comparative analysis between the cost of arbitration versus litigation.
Suppose the affidavit said, I would have hired a contingent fee lawyer and for a third or 40%. So if I lost, I wouldn't have any expense.
There are two approaches to that, Your Honor. The first, you really get two cracks at this argument on the prohibitive expense. Number one, before the district court, as counsel for appellant argued, but the arbitrator, and this is important about the plan, and we argue this in the brief.
Well, I don't understand you. Suppose the arbitrator says, well, I don't care that you could have hired a lawyer for nothing. I'm going to charge you the $10,000.
The individual would be required to pay what the arbitrator said.
Chilling.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, with respect to the chilling. We don't know what Mr. Darst is charging, who could have put in the affidavit for the district court and for this court to evaluate the actual cost that are involved in his representation.
We'll ask him.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. So all of those details, as the James Court case suggests to counsel, should be made available to the district court so that it may, in the first instance, make an analysis of whether there was a prohibitive expense. That's not in the record. That's not in the affidavit, and I think James is pretty compelling authority for that proposition. If you look at her affidavit, it's really no different than the affidavit that was submitted in James. And in that case, the outside amount, $80,000, is much greater than just identified as the outside amount in this case of $30,000. And the James Court did not find that that met the Greentree standard of prohibitively expensive. So I think that it's what didn't happen and what opportunities were available to appellant plaintiff at the district court that she didn't take advantage of. I'd also note that there is, with respect to the affidavit, there is no evidence in the record to support the claims or the arguments of counsel that she was given a stack of papers that she didn't understand. That's not in the record. If you look at what the district court considered, there were only four pieces of evidence. The applicant statement, the plan, the affidavit of Cindy Cook, and the
affidavit of the plaintiff. We said in the James case that she hadn't provided any evidence concerning the comparative expense of litigating her claims.
Correct.
So suppose in this case she showed that the cost was zero because she had a contingent fee contract. But that would be quite different from James, wouldn't it? So what would your position be if she has such an affidavit? Is that enough to require that she have no financial liability in the arbitration?
Our research has identified no cases that would answer that. My answer would be it would still be up to the district court to determine under all of the circumstances and the evidence before it whether that constituted prohibitive expense as that term was used in Greentree. And we don't have a record developed that would allow this court to evaluate whether the thought process of the district judge on that particular issue was correct.
Seems pretty dishonest, actually. I mean, it seems the only purpose of including such a provision would be to discourage the employees from asking for arbitration.
Your Honor, I don't think that's the case. I think that the indication that there will be costs associated with the arbitration, just as there would be costs, certainly there are some costs associated with litigating those claims in court. We don't know what they are in this record because there were no facts before the district court.
Do you think the contingent fee lawyers would take it without charging a dime?
Well, they might on the fee, but you still have to as a plaintiff. And as I've looked at those agreements over time, Your Honor, they have provisions for costs, for expenses.
Costs for filing. Some of them don't provide that at all. All they do is pay the filing fee.
Your Honor, I have not seen one that didn't impose some cost on the plaintiff, but
you have seen may not be the entirety of this. I'll take you down the street and find you 20 lawyers who will file it, and all you have to do is cough a filing fee.
Well, Your Honor, I'll concede that you've had an opportunity to review more than I have, not only by position, but by years of opportunity. But I will say this, we don't know in this case because there's no record made of it. We don't know if it would have been more than $10,000.
We're going to ask Mr. Darst.
Okay. Unfortunately, even if he gives you the answer, Your Honor, Judge McKinney was deprived of that opportunity. And he can't introduce evidence at this stage that would reverse the good judge because Judge McKinney had to operate on the record that was in front of him.
He did
on the four pieces of evidence. The plaintiff had her opportunity to make that case. She did not, through no fault of the finish lines. Had she offered something in her affidavit, then we would have had an opportunity to respond at the district court level as appropriate. We responded to the evidence that was presented to the district court. And on that note, with respect to the made available, there was no dispute at the district court level that this was made available to the plaintiff. Again, in her affidavit, which is in evidence, she could have pointed out the very facts which Mr. Darst has attempted to argue on her behalf in his briefs, which are not in evidence, so that the district court could consider whether or not it was truly made available in a way that would comport with law. Or expectation, but there are no allegations in her affidavit that she didn't understand, that there was duress, that there was coercion, that there was fraud. As Your Honor identified in questioning to counsel for appellant, she signed a document saying that she had it made available to her. Cindy Cook signed an affidavit saying, based on the review of her records, Finish Line made it available to her, and that her employment was conditioned upon signing it. To the extent that there would be any challenge to that, that would have should have been done in an affidavit to the district court to give the court an opportunity to evaluate the merits of those claims.
Could she have gone to arbitration without a lawyer?
Yes, she could have. There's no requirement of counsel.
One of the things about arbitration, it's supposed to save everybody money and time.
Yes, it is.
And you get in there and you get it over with. Now, she had all kinds of claims about discrimination. She had a miscarriage. She's fired a few days later. A lot of things that could kind of aren't very complicated.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if that, would she have to pay $10,000 for that?
I don't think so. If she didn't hire a lawyer, the answer is I don't believe she could have incurred costs of $10,000. Certainly an arbitrator would have the absolute right under this plan, which is essentially advisory, because the plan gives the arbitrator the right to eradicate all costs and put it all on the Finish Line if he chose, or she.
He could also charge her for his fee.
He could, in an appropriate circumstance. That is correct. An arbitrator could do that.
Would there be judicial review of the appropriateness of it?
No, there would not be, Your Honor, not under the FAA. But when the Congress and when the Supreme Court recognized that arbitration was to be favored and encouraged courts to enforce these contracts, when it reintroduced the law in 1947, it was clear that that was a risk that Congress and the Supreme Court was willing to assume. Arbitrators may get it wrong. Judges may get it wrong. But this was
anticipating cases like this.
Well, your
Federal Arbitration Act long antedates employment discrimination cases.
Okay. Lastly, Your Honor, as my time draws near, just with respect to the second issue, not the motion for summary judgment, but the motion for relief from judgment, which is obviously under the abuse of discretion standard. Again, you know, it doesn't help the plaintiff on appeal to argue that what other person's experiences are somehow relevant to what she already has said to the Finish Line. So Judge McKinney appropriately addressed that. All of these issues on the motion for relief are the exact same issues in the underlying summary judgment. That is, whether the plan was made available to her.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Darsh, we'll give you a minute. You can tell us about your fee contract, although we appreciate Mr. Yerk's point that we're not supposed to be supplementing the evidentiary record. But I'm curious anyway.
Yes, Your Honor. The affidavit of the plaintiff shows that she has no substantial assets. She and her children were living.
No, you're missing the point totally. I'm asking you about your contract.
Obviously, a contingent fee. But what I'm saying is that the inference.
Contingent fee?
Yes.
So that if she doesn't collect, you don't get a dime.
Exactly.
It doesn't cost her a dime.
Exactly. And that can be inferred from the fact that she has no assets in her affidavit. Now, in this case is very unusual. It's worse than the Ryan Steakhouse case. In this case, the Finish Line agrees that its affidavit was false, that the plan that it submitted was not made available to Ms. Bauman, and then they later on appeal tried to say, oh, it was another plan. But there was no affidavit that any plan was made available to her after that Exhibit 1 was admitted to not be made available to her. So the vice president did not know the plan. She submitted a different plan and made a false statement that plan was submitted to the plaintiff. The plaintiff didn't know the provisions of this plan. Her team leader didn't. Her supervisor didn't. Nobody did. Now, the FAA is based upon agreement. There has to be an agreement between the parties. There cannot be an agreement unless there's knowledge. Neither party knew the provisions of this plan. Now, if there's any integrity to the arbitration agreements, the arbitration process, the parties have to know the terms and agree to the terms. And the agreements cannot be based on a false statement that previous papers included the plan when it did not.
Did you do any background on this? They've got 700 stores, right? Does everybody have to sign this, or did you ever get that information?
Your Honor, we didn't. We were deposing her team leader and her supervisor and found out that they didn't even know the terms of the plan. So nobody knew the terms of the plan.
Well, I wonder if anybody read it all, they'd go to work here.
Pardon me?
I guess the question is, would anybody go to work here?
Well,
you wouldn't.
well, not if they knew they had to pay $10,000.
Well, that's what it says.
I was
I'm only asking
against.
Because it's here.
Thank you.
peace.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Doris and Mr. Yerkes. Next case for our